Mike Berman is co-founder and CEO of Psyquation, an AI-driven analytics platform for traders. During this conversation, Mike talks about some interesting behavioural observations across his database of 150,000 retail FX traders. If you're a private trader, it's well worth listening for those insights. If you're an institutional investor, there's particular value in Psyquation's alternative data sources as a means of generating alpha. Mike has a PhD in behavioural finance and runs a team of over 20 computer and data science experts out of the Ukraine. He's a really interesting guy and has built a very interesting business. I hope you enjoy our conversation. This is David Hobart from Beyond the Obvious, the podcast in search of unexpected insights for investment professionals. Mike, so fantastic to have you on. Really appreciate you making the time. Now, Mike, what caused you to get into to start Psyquation?
Dave, well, firstly, thanks so much for inviting me. It's actually the pleasure's all on my side, and I feel deeply honored that you thought of me. So what led me into Psyquation was immediately prior to Psyquation, I was running a company called Wrapper, which stood for Risk and Profit Analyzer. And what Wrapper was all about was incubating emerging traders. So I had come from a background of myself being a trader and started in almost 10 years ago. I met with my current partner, a guy by the name of Vladimir Kruglov, who's a mathematician. And in March next year, it'll be 10 years that we've been working together. And he started as an assistant to my quant strategy. So I was trading at the time. And then I had this vision of creating a platform for emerging traders. And we set up this company called Wrapper that enabled us to plug traders' brokerage accounts into a platform. We pulled all the data, we verified it, and we scored it. And we had a lot of early success. And we raised close to $60 million and allocated it to a bunch of traders. And along that journey, we were approached by an American crowd, pretty well-known company and a well-known personality in the trading world. And they had a very similar idea. And they didn't have any tech and they didn't have any quantitative scoring metric. So they liked what we were doing, and we figured that they were based in the US, in New York and Connecticut, that we'd have much more success with combining our efforts with them. And we effectively merged our company, and they acquired our intellectual property. It didn't quite work out like the way we had hoped, and Vlad and myself decided to look beyond and see what else we could do in the space with the knowledge we had acquired. You know, Vlad being a PhD in mathematics and myself having a PhD in behavioral finance, we thought we could explore the world of psychology and mathematical equations. And that's how we came up with this name, Psyquation.
Sure. So Psyquation being psychology and equation, so being psychology and maths in relation to the trading markets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so going from Wrapper into Psyquation, sort of what had you learned and then what was the goal there for Psyquation? What idea did you start out with what problem were you trying to solve?
Yeah. So the first thing is it's hard for many people to accept the fact that when you're in the derivative world, i.e. futures, CFDs, options, any kind of derivative, it's a zero-sum game. And I'll just explain that a little bit further. You know, for every dollar that someone is making, there is an equal loser. And then when you actually combine the friction of transaction costs, it's a negative-sum game. So, you know, net-net, all traders, or the average traders are losing money. So it's particularly difficult, and many people don't realize how difficult it is. And So I'm quite cynical as to whether people are actually able to derive a profit from trading, which seems strange for a guy who's spent close to 20 years trading professionally. But I don't think I can just leave it unsaid. While I believe the markets are largely random, I do think that there is alpha around the edges. But yeah, so the problem we thought we could solve was we could help traders identify where they're making mistakes of a behavioral nature or of a risk nature. Mm. So playing on that psychoequation, the psychology and equation angle, and that we can just alert traders to this knowledge, because most of the time it's buried deep in your unconscious, or you just don't know about it. You just don't have the knowledge that you're making these mistakes. So we thought if we can build a system that provides you with an alert and notifies you about these mistakes, it would help traders make more money by simply making less mistakes. So that was the vision.
Sure.
The initial vision. It's somewhat evolved, but where it's currently evolved to. So it's the same vision. It's just kind of we now bringing back the original vision of Wrapper, where we wanted to incubate traders. So I can, I can explain that.
Oh, sure. But how many traders have you now got within the ecosystem, or at least on your database? So what sort of data are you able to draw insight from?
Yeah, that's a great question. So currently, we've got a pretty large database with over 150,000 accounts. And it's a rich database in the sense that we see everything. So, we have a log of every single movement. So, for instance, if somebody put in a stop loss and then they move the stop loss, or they take profit and all those other things. So all that kind of information we've got. And
Wow, that's a rich database. And what's predominantly that it's a retail platform. So the 150,000, let's call them retail, foreign exchange traders. Would that be the reasonable way to summarize it?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say vast majority, probably 85%, is pure retail trading, with that remaining 15%, or let's call them emerging professional managers.
Sure. Wow.
And yes, focused mainly on the FX and index and metals.
Right. You must have some amazing insights. So Vlad, where's Vlad based?
So Vlad's based in the Ukraine, and in fact, our entire team, so we've got a team of 22 people, the entire team except me is based in the Ukraine. So I do a lot of, long distance, I was going to say phone calls. That's something of the past. Thank God for, the modern technology of Zoom and Skype and Slack and all that kind of stuff. So, so from a cost point of view and also from a talent point of view, we run the business mainly out of the Ukraine. And, but we domiciled in Australia.
So you've got a team of data scientists, mathematicians, et cetera, sitting in the Ukraine, trawling through a data set of all trades, live and dormant trading accounts.
Yeah.
There must be a treasure trove of behavioral and or trading insights, where people are making and losing money. Have you got, anything surprising inside of that? Like, is there any particular insights that are worthy of sharing? I mean, there'd be a lot, I imagine.
Yeah, the billion-dollar question, I guess. So I'll share just some of my observations, and some of it actually is quite surprising. I'll start with something quite surprising. And there's a thing in behavioral finance called the disposition effect, or in trading in general. And what the disposition effect is it's when people cut their winners short or quickly, and when they let their losers run, or in other words, carry on too far. And this is massive bias that is well researched in the academic field. So it's interesting because just in the last few months, we've taken on two PhD students who are collaborating with us, wanting to work with our data. And you guess it, what is their subject? Disposition effect. And we've probably spent the last 3 years, our data science team, working on the disposition effect, trying to pull something out of it that can be useful for our trading community. And here's the really surprising thing. while we can see there's a clear disposition effect, roughly 67% of all traders demonstrate this effect. What's quite incredible is we can't figure out if it's good or bad. So obviously everyone says it's bad. Well, almost everyone says it's bad, but you cannot. I will challenge most academics and practitioners to demonstrate with hard research that it's bad. Now, I'm not saying it's good either. What I'm saying is that one of the surprising things we found with our research, and yes, we've got a full data science team, and we tend to go quite deep into things. In fact, I'd argue we probably go a little too deep sometimes, and sometimes it'd be more beneficial just to cover more ground and instead of going as deep as we've gone. But we have gone deep in this particular one. And the interesting thing is we can't find any conclusive evidence that suggests it's good or bad.
Have you looked at different types of markets? So, you know, range-bound markets in foreign exchange, which would be, I'm guessing, 70% of the time or 80% of the time markets are ranging in FX. So inside that world, I imagine the disposition effect, it may be really hard to notice a profit or loss implication because, you know, if they hang on to their losses and it's in a range-bound market, well, they can wait till it comes back and get out.
Dave, it's a great question. And I can't give you a good answer, and other than to say that I probably think we haven't even gone to as far as classifying like market regimes for our research. And probably one of the big reasons is that in itself is like a billion dollar prize. If you can get that right, you've got keys to a major kingdom. And I'm not professing we've got that one right. So, you know, to put that further categorization over the research, but I definitely think what you just said there is something I'd like to come back to you with and say, give you a more conclusive answer. But yeah, I don't know the answer to that other than the fact that it's really surprising. And I guess one of the takeaways I would say with this kind of finding is that it's really important to understand that when somebody says there's a bias, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a one-size-fits-all. So what might be described in literature, academic literature, as a bias doesn't necessarily mean it's bad for all types of traders, because you could have a trader that actually is a really good trader that has a system that demonstrates disposition effect, but they are really good. They've got edge and they make good. So are we going to tell them that, you know, you're committing like a cardinal sin with this disposition effect when effectively it could be really good for them? So I'm giving you a little bit of a jumbled answer, but it's really surprising because it's big. This is what's made enormous careers out of many academic professionals that some of your listeners will be very familiar with these names. And, you know, it's not easy to reproduce the findings with real data. These guys have tortured the data to a horrible degree in their experiments. I find a lot of the academic experiments very far from reality with, you know, assumptions left, right, and center to try and make for a nice academic paper but it's not necessarily the real world.
So, Mike, big database again, and let's call it 85% of that, your database of sort of retail traders. Back of the envelope, like what percentage of your database makes money, and what percentage makes a living?
Okay.
Do you think?
Okay. Wow. Okay. So let me start with who makes and who loses money. So there's an interesting distinction here that many people won't realize. So when you say makes money, is it on percentage terms or is it on dollar terms? So I'll tell you the facts according to our database. So 84% of people lose money when you're measuring their performance based on a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But actually only 64% of people in our database lose money when you're measuring it on a dollar basis. So I think that's quite interesting. So, you know, people throw around a lot of, you know, how many people make money? And the question, I think people need to be a bit more precise with their question. You know, what are we talking about? Are we talking percentage? Are we talking dollars?
So how do you make the distinction there, Mike? Is it because people are topping up their accounts, or they're removing money from their accounts, or
So two reasons, I guess, is, you know, the effect of compounding. If you, you know, if you lose 50%, you need to make 100% to break square. Whereas if you lost $5,000, you need to make $5,000 to be square. So
it depends when the starting point on the data collection as well, I'm guessing. Yeah. But that should make it.
Yeah, well, our numbers will incorporate every, you know, from start and incorporating deposits and withdrawals and all that kind of stuff. I just think it's just important to know that there's a difference when you're looking at dollars, and people don't often look at that. So, you know, maybe that leads into your question in terms of how many people do I think can make a living out of this? So that's a really difficult question, for the simple reason our database is spread across the globe. So our community is across the globe. So, you know, we've got people who are farmers in Thailand and, you know, making $2,000-$3,000 a month is more than ample for them to lead a very comfortable existence. But I think what is, you know, here's another interesting fact that comes from our research, is that size does matter. And,
well, that's bad news.
I was hoping you would say that. you know, you've got awfully big hands. What we definitely find is that people who trade in with a larger account, it has a material impact on your ability, on your numbers, your performance numbers. People who have a large account tend to perform better, and that's probably due to the fact that they probably take the money more seriously. You know, when it's small money, a really small account, people tend to be a lot more reckless.
Yeah, swing for the fences.
So, I mean, one of the things I always say to people, you know, certainly in the trading world, people, I'll just stick with these kind of numbers. Let's say, for instance, you've got $100,000 that you intend to allocate to your trading, but you say, I'm going to stick $10,000 into the account first. And what tends to happen is you treat that $10,000 as $10,000, even though in your mind you once upon a time said, you know, you're going to treat this as $100,000. I'm just going to put $10,000 in the account. You actually treat it as $10,000. And you get more reckless. And then you just top up as you're losing too much. You keep putting money in. One of the things that I found is really useful is if you're intending to trade with $100,000, put $100,000 into your account. And it just sets you up mentally with the right focus.
Yeah, and then I guess your percentage drawdowns and your percentage risk per trade and all that sort of – all those metrics are kind of more realistic, and they're more comfortably within your, you know, natural risk limits and risk tolerances, et cetera.
Absolutely. I mean, can I just tell you, it leads – I'll give you an interesting other statistic. You know, when I did a study in terms of when people have a large drawdown in their first month of trading – We did a study, we said, okay, let's look at our database and say when people had a 10% or more drawdown in their first month versus when having that kind of drawdown in any other month, what is the impact on future performance? And what is interesting is we found that people who had an early drawdown performed 10 times an early big drawdown, so above that 10% threshold, they perform 10 times worse than if they had it later, that 10% drawdown later in their trading history. So, you know, you're doing yourself a disservice if, for instance, you have this small account when you could have had a bigger account. And we did the same study for people who encounter a 50% drawdown. Okay, so this is irrelevant when the drawdown was, but if you had a bigger than a 50% drawdown, your you performed six times worse.
So the chances of getting out of it are pretty remote.
Exactly. So you know, and what I find is these statistics, let me say it differently. These things imprint on your mind. When you see that drawdown in your account, it has a really negative effect. So coming back to my earlier suggestion of, you know, fund your account with the amount you intend and stop playing mental games, mental accounting. You know, you're getting nothing for your interest at the bank anyway. So you don't throw at me the argument that, oh, I'm getting such a good interest at the bank. Why should I leave the money sitting idle? I just think it's a dangerous way of playing mental accounting.
Sure. So, Mike, it sounds like, in the retail FX world at least, you know, 80, let's call it 80. I mean, it's somewhere between 65 and 85, but let's call it 80% of people lose money in trading. Mm-hmm. What's in your observation, what inside that 20%, like how do people, you know, the ones that are successful, like where do they find their edge? Do you have any sense of that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So here's where I'm arguably quite brutal in my analysis. Psyquation, we started initially with Wrapper, and we built this algorithmic scoring metric, which kind of identifies a trader's skill coefficient. And what I mean by the skill coefficient, I mean your ability to repeatedly do profitable trades on a risk-adjusted basis. So it's your edge in the marketplace. So we've already established that very few people have this edge. So I think it's crucial to firstly identify is what you're doing lucky or is there something meaningful? Is it robust to being repeated in the future? So I'm answering you in a long way, but I think it's just important to give it some context because firstly you've got to know if you actually have something or you don't. And too many people are fooled by randomness. And that, to me, is one of the greatest books ever written. I'm a huge fan of Nassim Taleb. And, you know, he's cynical beyond cynical, but he probably has good reason looking at the data. So it's you've got to be able to have an objective viewpoint if you've got an edge or not. And I think edge can come in a number of ways. It can come from, let's say, an automated strategy, or it can come from this, let's call it a more discretionary, intuitive look at the world. But your edge can come in a lot of different forms. It just requires, I'm trying to think of how I can explain this. You know, if you're a discretionary trader and your edge is your ability to take on the markets and be a contrarian, then you need a whole stack of psychological assets in your arsenal to be able to withstand those things, along with money management and all that. And if you're trading a quantitative strategy, then you need to have, you know, access to the right data that can kind of give you that edge. And I'm not sure if price action alone is enough. I think, you know, you're trading against the best of the best in the market, and you somehow have to plug into alternative data sources that can try and give you something that others in the market.
So when you say alternative data sources, Mike, what can you give an example? Like, what would in your mind be an alternative, you know, data source that could potentially provide an edge to a trader?
Okay, yeah. So I've noticed that a lot of people. Who've been successful, let's say in the Forex market, which is the ultimate zero-sum game. So if you can be consistently making money in this market, you've got something. And I notice people who do well in this market have access to data flow, like order flow. And they can get a sense of what's going on beneath the market. Now, remember, this market is largely not traded on an exchange. It's OTC, so it's not, people don't really have a good sense of what the volume is. Now, I think having access to what real underlying volume is hugely powerful. And I know
to that you. I mean, Psyquation has 150,000 traders with, you know, millions of data points on any given day.
Yes.
I imagine, you know, the data that you have fingers on in that context would be pretty meaningful, I'd imagine.
Yes. So, and we, you know, I don't want this to sound like a plug, but we are about to release, it's already available on our website, what we call the OFSI tool. It's OFSI stands for Order Flow Sentiment Indicator. And basically it's taking a look at, call it the real-time order flow of 30,000 traders.
Mm-hmm.
But what differentiates ours from, let's say, the marketplace is that we are able to segment ours according to different parameters. So, for instance, you can look at the order flow of people with a Psyquasion score, let's say, of 60 or higher, or you could segment your order flow and say, I want to look at the order flow on the euro dollar with people whose accounts are only, who are profitable or have had drawdowns of less than 30%. So basically by segmenting it, you can kind of see who's the smart crowd and who's the dumb crowd. And, you know, I was speaking to...
And does your data make that distinction? Is it the stuff that you're making readily available? Yes. Or is it on a subscription basis? Or how does that work on your website?
If you've got an account with our... If you have an account with our strategic partner broker, you get it for free. And they are going to be differing versions coming out in terms of speed, in, you know, down to real time or slightly delayed,
mm-hmm.
Or updated every, you know, hour or 15 minutes. But it will be in reach of the retail, price-wise, it will be very much in reach of the retail trader. And don't think it's me trying to be all charitable and paying the tax, but I genuinely think this is, you know, it's too long been that people with big checkbooks are able to access data and make money off these poorer account or the smaller accounts, and it's not entirely fair. So, I mean, our business will grow by sharing that information cheaply. And, you know, I'd love to have really talented people who don't have access to money, you know, get a leg up and take down some of the bigger guys who don't necessarily deserve to have the bigger money.
Well, it would be interesting because I'm guessing, you know, that data, what's it called? OFSI data. It's one thing to have the data, then it's another thing how to, you know, profit from it. So, which is another system building kind of process in itself, I imagine. But
yeah. So, correct. So there are two ways there are three ways you can access it. You can check it out on our website where you've got, like, you know, you can see it in a web browser and play with the tool, or you can access it via MT4 terminal, so you can run it and design automated trading strategy around it. And thirdly, for the more, let's say, the more sophisticated, you can access it via our API and build your own in whatever language you prefer to code in. You could build a strategy. But yeah, we can only give you so much. We can give you a couple of predefined parameters which we think will give you some sort of an edge, but largely, the edge will be up to each and every trader to try and extrapolate that information. But it's cool data, and I know big hedge funds, the biggest names you've heard of in your career, are paying decent sums of money to brokers I know for order flow. So yeah, it's that kind of thing, and I think we're moving into a world now where, you know, I think. I mentioned earlier on that I'm a very keen reader of the newspaper, and I like to read the newspaper cover to cover. But from there, I draw inferences in terms of sentiment towards the market. And that's my own internal biases and so on and so forth. And now you've got computers with natural language processing, reading, passing through news, lots of it, trying to define, you know, is the market bullish or not, and trying to derive strategies from that. So, yeah, I think we're in a very interesting space. it still remains really difficult to make money, but money is makeable. And if your listeners haven't read a book that's recently come out, I just can't emphasize enough the Jim Simons book, The Man Who Solved the Markets, just recently come out. It's just breathtaking to read about a mathematician who's truly cracked the markets. There is no one who's come close to the kind of performance numbers he has.
Yeah, and interestingly there, it wasn't straight up and down. It took him some time to crack the code, like he had plenty of failed attempts.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Dave, you know, if I can, you know, he was around 50 when he started seeing some success on this front.
Anyway, Mike, I really, really appreciate you taking the time here today. There's some great insight inside, you know, the treasure trove that you've built in a imagine building a business with 150,000 live trading accounts sitting in the back end. I know to our listeners, you know, there's enormous value in knowing that that's there. So I wouldn't be surprised if you hear from some of them. So Mike, on that note, where can people best find you?
Yeah, I guess the best place is, firstly, thanks. It's been a great pleasure speaking to you, Dave. And I hope my answers weren't too long-winded and people are able to draw some insights. And we pull in new insights out all the time. So, you know, I think if you come to Psyquation, that's psyquation.com. From there, you'll kind of find your way around, and it doesn't cost you anything to join our community and to taste the platform. And, you know, we are helping people's dreams come true there. We've got an incubation program for traders, and we've incubated over 105 traders already, and people are, you know, being taken on a journey, hopefully to become professionals. And there's no greater joy for me, having been in the industry for a long time, been through the ups and the downs of it, and by golly, it is difficult and it's hard to raise money, but it's so enjoyable at the same time. And if that's your dream, to help somebody fulfill their dream, no better feeling in the world. So, I feel blessed. It's great. I love it.
Good one, Mike. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Great. Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
That's it for today's episode of Beyond the Obvious. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a favourable rating or review in the App Store. If you'd like to get in touch, please reach out to me on LinkedIn. Until next time, hooray.